This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Welcome, Spotlighters. Carolina Benetti here, and we have not one, not two, but three of the dashing, debonair leading gentlemen of TV's own Versailles. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes.
Oh, Stroby.
Some great tunes to bring us in today. And sitting here next to me, I have
Alexander Vlahos, who plays Philippe Duc d'Orléans in the TV show Versailles.
Evan Williams, I play Chevalier de Lorraine, and this is my new single, which just dropped this week.
And I'm Ty Runyon, I play Fabien Marshall on the series Versailles.
And I'm your moderator today, Carolina Benetti, and we're excited to jump into this, right, guys?
Yes.
2 feet, straight in.
Born ready. Let's roll.
Like Lady Gaga.
Yes.
Oh.
And that was your music we were listening to in the intro.
Yes, it was. My new music project, Bright World, and the first single, Tough Drug, which just dropped this week. Check it out.
Really
Spotify,
exciting.
Apple Music, everything.
Now, we're going to get into all the details about Evan, Alexander, and Ty as we go along. But to start it off, for anybody who tuned in just because they saw your handsome faces and they want to know more, can we tell them about Versailles? Who are your characters? What time does this take place in? And why should people start with season one? In English.
just because it might be a good idea. No, yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's Versailles is about the rise of Louis XIV and his creation of the Palace of Versailles, set in 17th century France. Louis is played by the wonderful George Blagden, and I play his brother, Philippe Duc d'Orléans. And the show is sort of mostly an historical drama, but it's written by two wonderful guys, Simon Mirren and David Wollstonecroft, who come from criminology backgrounds, sort of like procedural criminal minds and spooks. So it's not your normal period drama. It's not Downton Abbey. Let's just say that very much.
It's the story of what probably happened behind closed doors, because all the history that we know is heavily doctored by Louis XIV, because he was the original tyrant. He was the king of propaganda. So we tell the behind closed doors, backstabbing, murderous intrigue, sexual politics, all of it. Everything glitzy and glimy.
Which for some, for some people who don't know, Louis XIV was actually one of the longest reigning monarchs of European history. He started as a toddler and had, I believe, a 72-year reign.
Yeah, like a bad
smell. He would not leave.
And Ty?
Yeah.
Character.
What's up?
I love your character, by the way. He's so
Thank
much
you.
Fun.
Oh, thanks. I do too. Fabien Marshall is the head of secret police for Louis XIV. And I get myself involved quite heavily in all of the behind the scenes back world, backstabbing, intrigue. It's like full of nefarious characters that I have to deal with constantly.
Yeah.
Work is never done. And I play the Chevalier de Lorraine, who is the lifelong lover of the king's brother. And they're both real men, and they had a lifelong love story living into their 70s. And so we play the true love story of the show. And that doesn't mean it's peaceful, though. It's very turbulent, very toxic at times. And I'm always trying to stay relevant because I'm not a royal and I don't have blue blood, so I don't have a job. So if I die... If I lose the relationship, I'm dead. So I'm always trying to make sure that I stay on the inside and a little bit desperate.
Your character is always like right on the line of making terrible decisions.
That's what we love him for.
The Chevalier is always in somebody's mess.
That's right.
And you have to deal with it.
Yeah. Oh, constantly. Yeah, constantly. No, but it's the heartbeat of the show in a bizarre way because, you know, Louis has all these amazing women in his life, many mistresses. He has, he goes through two queens in the show. And, but the real true form of love that we represent is these two men. And it's, I'm really proud of our relationship. Not our real life one, though. Get your hand away from me. I don't know who you are. But yeah.
That's awesome. And now, also, for your character, being the head of secret police, the police back then were just a little bit different than modern day society. Do you want to explain a little bit?
A little bit different, yeah. I mean, seen through a modern lens, some of the things that Fabian does is quite horrific. But at the time, he was essentially a guy doing his job and trying to do the best job he possibly can at torturing people for information and, you know, just plain torturing people for
fun. He's a man of few words, but,
and many implements.
many implements. But I mean, he would be if he did a bad job, you know, he would be cast aside and back on the streets. So.
Well, Louis is often unhappy with him, but I feel like he low key relishes the torture. Do you find that when you play your character?
You mean the torture of
people. Prisoners, people he drags in there,
friends,
royalty
lovers,
he throws countrymen. In under question.
Yeah, I think he's found a particular niche that he's quite good at, and he's running with it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So now, how does the show film? Because it is kind of like a limited series. It's not like a typical TV show. Do you guys film it like a feature in the sense that you go away for like 4 or 6 months? Like, how long do you film? Do you get an episode a week? Are they sending you the script like a week, or do you get it all and then go and work on it? How was it all? Could you explain it for us?
So it's six months. First season actually was 7.5, 8 months because we had Christmas slotted in the middle of that. So it's usually we it's like summer camp. We go over to Paris and we film for 6 months.
What an awful place to go work. Yeah.
Summer camp
Paris.
In Paris. And then, summer camp with wine.
And then, you know, and we get our scripts in blocks. So for example, season three, the Richard Clarke, who's our first director, he directed episode 1 to 4. So we got all 4 scripts as one, and that's and then you work those. So you're jumping from episode 4 to episode 3 to 1 and then second block was Ed Bazalgette, who did 5, 6, and 7, and then Peter Van Hees, who did 8, 9, and 10. So you get your scripts in sort of big chunks, and then you deal with those ones that you're dealing with. And sometimes there's a bit of a crossover. Sometimes we did double banking. Sometimes we even did triple banking, depending on the locations.
Could you explain what triple banking is for people?
Double
who may
banking
not know?
Is like, so if one block is finishing, you normally have the completion, and then you start the next block maybe on Monday.
It.
Whereas double banking, you would overlap by maybe a week. Triple banking is when the other director comes back and fits in some days because they need a location. So it's usually about location. And, well, it's usually about money.
Which means that you could be shooting, if you're any regular block, you could be shooting any scene from any of the 4 episodes you're working on. So you got to keep it straight in your head. But if you're double banking, you could be shooting a scene from any of 8 episodes. Or
triple banking,
seven
that's the whole
or 8.
Series.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, it's insane. But that's part of the job, actually, of being an actor. That and getting up and at the crack of dawn,
5 a.m.
and pretending like it's the afternoon. That's actually that's a lot harder than it looks. Yeah. Like, it's so glamorous, but most of the time we're just dragging our butts. We're like, oh my god,
the makeup exists for
journeys in the morning, because usually something we filmed in Versailles, and we filmed in this studio that was 20 minutes outside of Paris, but we mostly filmed in these beautiful castles like the compass of Paris, like north, south, east, and west. And they were something, you know, the longest journey was like 1 hour and 45 from pickup in the middle of Paris to get to this, like, Fontainebleau is the furthest one away. So, you know, your pickup then is like accommodated to that. So you came picked up at 4:30 and you're like thinking, this is ungodly. I only went to bed at midnight. This is ridiculous. And then we all get in the car. Sometimes there's us 3 in the car together. We all get in. And I bring a pillow. I'm like, good night, guys.
Yeah.
1 hour and 45.
You heard it here first. Yeah. Alex Vlahos is narcoleptic in any motor vehicle.
I
don't think I've ever seen you awake in any movie.
Oh my god, I'm concerned for your driving.
I do not drive.
Well, you live in London, so you just forego a car, right?
It's anything that's like a little bit of a rock. I'm off.
Are you trying to put me to sleep?
There you go. See, it's easy, right? But I love sleep. There you go. That's a scoop for you.
Same. Right. Look. You're right here on the low.
Extra,
low five.
Extra,
right. Oh, yeah. That's
breaking. TV. Breaking just now.
Vlahos likes his sleep.
AfterBuzz TV exclusive.
Yeah! I knew there was a sting coming. Thank you very much, people in the back.
Great. Sleep. It's my favorite too. So
isn't
I feel it, you
isn't
on that
it
one.
Fun.
It is. Coffee's my second favorite.
Oh,
which
amen.
Is kind of like it's like
hell
the,
yeah.
Together
some,
they don't make sense.
There.
It's, they
I
do.
Like it.
Do you know you drink so much coffee? Eventually, it doesn't affect you like that.
Oh, absolutely not.
Like
no, it's
you
just
sleep.
Just the taste.
But for you guys, also, I really wanted to talk about what a great job Versailles did as a show with all of your female counterparts.
For real.
So women in Hollywood, it's been a big issue with female parts and saying that like women aren't written well. These are not your typical Renaissance, Middle Ages women. Like this court, I felt that watching it, all the female characters were to be feared and possibly revered, mm-hmm. but mainly feared. Mm-hmm. How was it for you getting to interact with those female characters, and how did you feel about your co-stars and getting to have such like rich experiences throughout the series?
There's a real good speech that Amira Kazar has in season one where she's talking about the power that women have in the court of Versailles. And basically, the realm of sexual politics was legit. If you think about the power that the women had over Louis, his various mistresses, it's not the public face of Versailles, but they very much were involved in all the string pulling in the background. So I think we were blessed to have some really strong female actresses as well.
Oh my God,
who
they
really,
were so good.
They
yeah.
took it and ran with it. And
Anna Brewster, Jessica Clarke, Naomi Schmidt, you know, all those. Yeah. Eliza in season three is just, she plays Marie-Thérèse. She has the most unbelievable arc and I think the people that are watching on Ovation will be really, really, really happy.
And they all found their own niche as well. They all had very specific characters with their own archetypes and managed to transcend the just being the corseted beauties of the court. They were, I think you said it right there, to be feared and
to
revered.
Be feared. Yeah, I loved working with Amira Kazar. You know, our relationship in season one was just, she's just a powerhouse. You know, and Beatrice, like Evan was saying, I mean, she embodied that
in power her, palace
in her role as well. Yeah. You know, and
Yeah, and then just like you said, they all complement each other.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, they're integral and vital to the show, not just a sort of secondary or like window dressing as some sort of period dramas put the women, but they're actually even more so more important than the guys because they have Louis's ear. They influence his decisions, and you get to see that on the show, which I think is really important. And also,
which frustrates your character to no end.
Everything frustrates my character as long as he's not got a guy in his lap. I think David Wollstonecraft and Simon Mirren, our showrunners, they made a strong pact in season one to make sure that everyone had a level playing field and that every character could be fought for and treated with respect. Mm. And, you know, on the surface, you know, Louis goes through women quite quickly, and that can seem quite, I don't know, derogative or like not PC or whatever that is. But also the women that do get introduced then sort of take the baton and run with it.
That's right. And audiences these days are sophisticated, and they want to see stories that are balanced. And get to see, like in season three, not only do we have all these royals who are inside the court, they also introduce Paris. Mm-hmm. And so we see the that sort of upstairs, downstairs disparity. And we get to see the women who are in the streets of Paris just fighting for every next meal. And that juxtaposition, I think, is really interesting. And I think fans are really going to like that in the third season.
I'd love to like also interject before we get into more stuff about the third season, because we can bring that in a second, because we actually have a clip for you guys. We won't play it just yet, but we do have a clip for you guys, and we have some photos, and we'll go into it. But I was going to say, one of the main antagonists throughout the series that people should watch for is William of Orange, which has been interesting
that little
for you
blight.
Guys to play.
Wow. Played by the wonderful George Webster. He did a brilliant job with it. William of Orange's season, I would say, is season two. He's mentioned in season three, but it's actually I wouldn't say the big bad. We haven't really got a big bad, but in season three, Leopold, played by Rory Given, surname, and who's amazing. And also Ken Bones, who plays the Emperor. Oh, yeah, he's amazing. Yeah. Representative of the Vatican.
Yes. Mm,
yeah. And like so, so yeah, George. So the William of Orange is like, he's pretty epic, but he's sort of. Not to sort
he's
of
always give, like in the back. I mean, saying well, he's the catalyst for all of the bad guys that kind of come
he's
down.
The mirror to yeah. Louis. He's
the reverse puppet master.
Yeah, and then there's an amazing. We do it in episode 7 of season 2. There's an amazing that we try to sort of commit to doing a bottleneck episode, didn't they? Where they put George and George together, Louis and William, and it was epic to see the two of them just sort of over a dinner table, just sort of sparring words wise. And there's but yeah, he is in the background a lot and the background of season 3, but he doesn't turn up in season 3, does he? No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't at all. No, there's no George. But we sort of, he's still there.
He's hovering over the shoulders looming. Of everyone. Yeah, looming. Yeah. Great
looming,
word.
Great word. Cheers well, to that.
Yes.
Cheers to looming.
Like a judge
cheers
Geppetto.
On looming.
Cheers to looming. Cheers to looming.
And from cheersing on looming, now we're going to jump into this clip. So for those of you who are excited, we can tune in. Let's see what
I'm
we've
excited.
Got here.
That's pretty good tequila, actually.
This is strong.
As the linen, the wine perfectly chilled, and the glasses never empty. And these flowers are flaccid. I want only the blooms bursting with vigor. The king has decreed this event should represent the pinnacle of France's success. I do not wish to disappoint him. Go.
Right.
So, tell me how much you missed me.
I was somewhat preoccupied marshalling troops, defending the Empire, and dodging death.
I have been rather busy myself.
Well, that cavorting and carousing must be quite grueling.
Of course, I must hear all about your derring do on the field of battle, but we have a little surprise for you first.
Might be a future king of France.
A fighting tiger like his father. Make it stop. You're not holding him correctly. You need to support his head.
Oh, he's hungry. And you're not anatomically equipped.
You should have seen the birth. Utter carnage.
There it is, baby. That's the magic.
Utter carnage.
What a terrifying image in a time of, like, no epidural. You should have seen the birth. Utter carnage. And I was like, But that's also a fun dynamic between the two of you, is that you have a wife, like, throughout the entire series.
Season 1, different wife as well. Yeah,
so, different wife,
yes. And season 2, the amazing Jessica Clark, but Princess Palatine. It does offer an amazing dynamic as a sort of as a threesome, comedy wise, as well as sort of as pathos, and there's a lot of true emotion between the three of us. What's amazing about the start of season 3 is that Philippe comes back from war, obviously a changed man because he suffers with PTSD. So there's this idea that he comes back and he sort of doesn't want to be faced with all the gold. I think it's probably the worst thing he wants to see, and is presented by his boyfriend and his wife being mother and father. And I think that just sort of sends them into, well, okay, that's different, you know. And the end of season 2, Chevalier and the Princess Palatine were at odds. Well, they were at odds throughout all of the season. They sort of came to some sort of quiet resolution together. So it was so nice to see season 3 that you two were sort of, you know, the sort of the par, the pair.
And we had great chemistry working together, and it was really cool because the writers noticed that and leaned into it and gave us a really nice storyline where we could rely on each other in season 3 and be, as we like to call it, the curl sandwich.
The curl sandwich. Me being in the middle and then these two blonde curls next to the side. Yeah, they're the bread and I'm the meat.
The cheese.
Cheese,
I mean, let's
you.
Be honest.
Yes, cheese. That's good.
I'm really concerned if you're eating brown cheese.
It's France. It's France, baby. You just
go with
you
it.
You don't ask questions.
just smile and nod.
You're so cheeky.
Hi.
Sorry. So for I love it. For fun facts for people that are watching the show, mm-hmm. how long does it typically take you in hair and makeup to become your characters? Because the hair is just so luscious.
Yeah, what is it? It's about 40? Yeah, it's 45 for the wig and another, and then depending on makeup, you know.
About an hour and 45 from the minute we get out of the car to yeah. we're on set, right? So, like, you get your little croissant and your coffee, but, yeah, it's...
And the wardrobe, too, takes a little bit of time.
It does.
And we're all kind of shuffling around stations because they only have so many people doing each thing. Mm-hmm. So he'll get his wig while I get my mustache trimmed. You'll see that mustache. It's like... It doesn't stay that small on its own. They have tiny little scissors and would spend 25 minutes every morning kind of just taking it down.
Yeah, so everyone sort of tags each other in, you know, that you sort of go on like a conveyor belt, don't you?
Yeah.
And then sometimes you come in and they're like, so we don't need you right now, so you can sit there for half an hour. So you've just been brought in to then just sit. You're like, cool.
Or great. 6 hours. Yeah.
But I mean, you could like nap. They always have those little benches in hair and makeup.
Unless you have the wig on, and then they're like...
You are not allowed to sleep with the wig. You need to sit. You need to sleep sat up. This is why I've learned my skill about sleeping. Another scoop for you here. So, you just, so what I would sort of... We'd all do is just... I would just sort of prop myself up like this.
How did you do it?
Yeah. Like that. Just prop myself up, and then that was it. Yeah. That's me done for the day, you know? Sleeping like this. That's another impression. Oh, I'm just on fire to do.
Did you guys brilliant. Pick up any tricks from him on the sleeping sat up?
Like the sort of Berenstain Bears approach, really. Like this is what not to do.
I was afforded the luxury of not having a very meticulous mustache, you know, or look. And my hair was always a little bit greasy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was actually allowed to
sleep.
Your
hair isn't as long as theirs. Like they have like, right?
Yeah, what's maybe. It? I mean, it's pretty long.
It was kind of short. Like,
it just was matted together like a...
Glorious though, like you guys have amazing
Farrah Fawcett. I got the
rocks.
Farrah Fawcett look in season three. They finally nailed it.
We had five wigs each. I had five. George had six.
Did you name them?
No, but I wish I did. Should we go back?
I had a few names.
If there's ever a reason to go back and do film and get a season four, that's it.
Tatiana.
You have it here, guys. We're doing a season four. They have to name the wigs.
Ovation. I know you're watching. Commission, maybe.
What? Also, it was just they did what they had to do. Like for Alex and I, they kind of had to make us look pretty all the time. Mm-hmm. Whereas Ty, he's such a man. If they tried to trim his mustache, it would just break the scissors every time. So they're like, well, I guess this is what we're going for.
Shattered. Oh, we lost him.
He's such a man.
No, yeah, my first wig, the original Tatiana.
Oh, he named
it. You did name it. You know what? Elena, high five from across the table.
High five. You know, I think
because they were like, hands. It like. There we go.
There you go.
All the way through.
And then there was Elena, which was my
Jesus
stunt
Christ.
Wig.
Christ.
Yeah. I love you
all
so much for
Eastern
naming
European,
them.
You know, names, because I figured
my
hair is probably coming
shoot.
From Eastern Europe.
Perfect. Yeah.
I did not know you named them, Mike.
Oh, yeah, me and Mathieu.
That's the kind of stuff you don't tell people.
Yeah,
so
you need to give that to yourself.
Now you know you were slacking.
Yeah. Alex was asleep.
Well, he was busy now.
Because
I wasn't slacking. I was like this.
Slacking.
Having a whale of a time.
So just high points for season three that fans that have been like watching the show since the beginning should be really thrilled to see. What do you think are some kind of like changes or turning points? Any?
There's a big story. We got the Man in the Iron Mask, which we're doing in season three. So everyone sort of knows the
Leonardo DiCaprio version?
Film, and also the sort of French mythology around it. You know, it's sort of told to school children, you know.
Yeah.
But we do that classic thing in Versailles where we put our own spin on it. So, that storyline starts at the end of episode one.
Very cool.
And it goes all the way through until the reveal towards the end of the series, and then there's the big payoff at the end. But the person that is the Man in the Iron Mask is possibly the biggest threat to Louis's crown. Tune into that one and see who that might be.
And as you could probably tell in the clip that we watched, things are not exactly hunky-dory between the two lovers. So it might be possible that the Chevalier might...
You heard it here first.
...might be outsourcing for love in the near future and be a little bit of a fish out of water. And we might see him fail in a whole new way.
Well, as we're chatting, we can also pull up the photos so that people that are watching us online can listen while they look at a couple photos that we have from set.
So that's actually us in our happier days.
Yeah, remember those days.
These are amazing. I mean, look at the costumes. I'm gone.
They're incredible. Yeah, but I mean, do you know what really gets me is the design of the palaces. Like, your sets are mind-blowing.
Well, this is actually in Versailles. Yeah. That is, we can, you could, that's actually in the Hall of Mirrors, because there's no way.
Which they do the big reveal this season. So that's what he's been, that's spoiler, that you get to see it.
There's been, that's the big, that's the sort of the big arc for Louis, is that he's finally gets his, he's finally completed his palace. And then what else have you got left once you've done the thing that you want to set out to do, when you think, well, I need to be bigger than the palace. So he sets out to try and become absolute power, basically turn himself into a god.
Which the representation
is,
of God
on Earth, which is
but his parents kind of put that on him because of the name that they chose for him. They basically named him like a divine, like miracle of God.
Yeah.
Because his mother, for people that don't know history, Queen Anne, couldn't have children. And she kept having miscarriages until she was 37 and finally had Louis, and then reigned as regent until he was.
Look at you dropping in a little nugget of Wikipedia
in
us.
Can I just give you a little?
Thank you. Also, no, I like history.
Also, that little nugget of information just dropped is so relevant to the Man in the Iron Mask story.
Ooh.
Oh my God! Another scoop. Hit me with a sting.
No, he's not paying attention.
God,
to us.
Dang
it!
But you're
and as we're talking about history and facts, I want to kind of quiz you guys. So, Alex, you can't cheat because you're right next to me. You can't move, but you can't look. I'm going to make like a little wall with the...
I'm not going to cheat, but I'm going to look this way.
Look at Rundog.
I'm going to look at Ty. Ty, look at Evan. Evan, look at the sky.
So, you guys have been working on Versailles for 3 seasons now. And I'm hoping that along the way, doing your characters, you've learned some fun historical tidbits.
Sure.
So, I've got some questions for you.
Good
you
luck,
ready?
Good luck, studio.
You scared?
Good luck, everyone.
Terrified.
Born scared.
And whoever knows, just feel free to answer. So what do Louboutin and King Louis's court have in common?
Red sole shoes.
That's right.
Red sole shoes.
Absolutely.
Red sole shoes.
I've actually got some Louboutins because I was in Versailles. Then she gave them some to me. So.
Awesome.
Cha-ching, name drop.
So the background on that is that if you were in favor with the king, for people that don't know, they were allowed to go to a special cobbler who would cobble a red bottom shoe, and that meant that you were in the king's favor.
Yeah. Red bottom shoe in the played in the same way as fat bottom girls, like in Queen.
Yikes, let's move on.
Okay, so second question. What very famous gem, which now resides at the Smithsonian here in Washington, D.C., once belonged to King Louis XIV?
Can you repeat the question, please?
What very famous gem which resides at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C.? Go for it.
Is it the heart diamond?
That's in Titanic, Evan.
You're so close. The Hope Diamond.
The Hope Diamond.
Yes. I'll give you that one. Well, that was really good, Evan. Yeah, the Hope Diamond. It actually, so it used to be called the French Blue, and it is 45.52 carats, and it was assumed lost until, I believe, gemists came together, and they realized that it was actually the same gem from Louis XIV's court, because it went missing after the revolution.
Wow.
It went missing, as in, I in Chevalier's back pocket.
Yeah. He probably imagine, left with it.
Imagine being the peasant who stormed the gates and was like, everybody else is just burning stuff, and he's like,
I'm taking this.
I'm just going to go home and maybe you're... I'm tired.
I'm tired. Okay. I've got 2 more questions, and then we're going to move on. But you guys are doing great. I was, like, hoping to stump you a little bit more. This is really good.
Keep trying. Mm-hmm.
What it's dance coming. Was King Louis XIV a fan of, and what lasting institution did he create?
Ballet.
Absolutely.
Ballet, a lasting institution.
Yes, he created 2 institutions because of his love of music and ballet that actually changed the face of French ballet into what we know today.
There you go.
No? Okay. No. Do you know? Giving up? Passing?
Royal Ballet something.
The Sorbonne?
I don't know. No, I don't.
No, not the Sorbonne. It is the Académie Royale de Danse et Académie d'Opéra.
I was going to say that. I was going to say that.
He himself danced in over 80 ballets.
Do you know what? Have you seen, you know, Louis and George dances in the show? Mm-hmm. Like, damn, does he dance?
Yeah.
And the Sorbonne is food, right? It's cuisine?
Yes.
No, it's a, isn't it like a finishing school? I'm not sure.
A finishing school.
It's like etiquette.
It's like a huge university now, but I think it started as like a finishing school.
I'd like to phone a friend.
I could be very wrong. I buy it. Not.
I let's go with that. Buy it. Chips in.
And what here in the United States is named after King Louis the 14th?
St. Louis.
St. Louis, Louisiana.
Louisiana.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Give me the point, baby. Oh,
yeah. St. Louis is very close, but it's actually the state of Louisiana.
And we actually talk about that in episode one of season three. Send them off to the Americas. Louisiana.
You do.
Did I win? I think I won.
I think it was a team game.
You can win.
Just gently rock him until he falls asleep.
This is my prize.
You're doing great. Yeah.
I love it.
Okay, so we can continue. Great, he's done now. and then for everybody who just loves you guys from being on the show, you know, fans always tune in. They want to know more. So, Alex, you've been working on some pretty cool projects, specifically directing with one of your co-stars from Versailles. So can you tell us how you got into directing? What made you want to get into it?
Yeah, well, I mean, what made me want to get into it was having basically worked in television for 12 years as an actor and seeing really good directors come through and some bit bad ones as well, and learning from them and realizing that I might have an eye for him, realizing, you know, all that sort of thing, the other side of the camera. A friend of mine who's in drama school with me, he sent me a script and I started giving him some notes, and then we crowdfunded it and we got £14,500, which is a lot of money, which is great. We shot on film, 35mm.
Wow.
And for about a month and a half we were auditioning for the lead girl. Auditioning and people weren't right, and we put out offers and they were either busy. And then I live with this person. I live with Anna. And I was having coffee one morning and I was like, why didn't I ask Anna? Anna, do you want to be in my film? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, well, that was easy. She was perfect. Absolutely. So Anna Brewster, who plays Madame de Montespan, she's phenomenal. And it's an amazing film. It's about acceptance and love. It's about heartache and secrecy. So yeah, it's really cool. And then we're hoping to enter it into the Berlin Film Festival, which will be in February. So the minute I come back from LA, I'm going straight into the edit and hopefully getting a BAFTA.
BAFTA.
Congratulations. I mean, it's a really big deal to do your first film.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And the guys have obviously, and they're probably bored of it now, but I've just been racking my ear off of them because I absolutely enjoyed it. I loved it. I loved every second of it. And it offers a different form of adrenaline rush than acting does. And I quite like being the middle, the spider in the middle of the diagram rather than being on the outside looking in.
And I've seen the rushes it's beautiful and people are going to love it.
And now, with that, Evan, you have also been working on something pretty incredible.
I'm loving it.
AKA your side hustle, not side hustle, alter ego, music.
Yes, I've been writing music my whole life. And finally, I got my act together and I recorded an EP in Nashville. And the name
That's so cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Super cool.
So cool to just actually have it out and have the whole world listening to it. And I can follow the metrics, so I can see where in the world people are listening to
Italy are winning at the moment?
Oh, yeah. Italy's winning at the moment.
Wow.
I got a leaderboard up on my Instagram. So the track is called Tough Drug, and it's sort of like alternative folk pop indie. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how to talk about it. Just listen. You tell me what you think.
It's incredible.
I liked it.
It's
amazing. Yeah, I listened to it last night.
Super proud of you, brother.
Thank you. Woo! Man. And it's about codependence and what happens when we get addicted to the people we love and how it goes dark.
Ooh.
And I think that's something we don't really talk about. So it's cool to explore that in a way that will also get you moving. So check it out. Bright World, Tough Drug. And it's on Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Tidal, everything.
All the places.
And I mean, listen to that voice, you guys. You have to check out his singing.
Check that out.
And then, Ty, you just got back from Montreal because you were working on a film. Can you tell us a little bit about it? Can you say the title?
The title might actually change, but I just finished a thriller that we shot in Montreal called Thicker Than Water. And that may change, but that was a blast. A city I love.
Do you play a villain?
No.
What?
What?
Mic drop.
I didn't know he was allowed.
Does your agent know about this?
I tend to play the outsider, but, yeah, you know, kind of heroic.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. True. But yeah, no, so finish that, and then also a little bit of music, and I might as well plug that because my band, Corridor, were psych rock band, like heavy psych.
You didn't send me your music.
No, I did not.
If you send me it, I'll listen.
No, and when we finish mixing our album, A Separate Reality, I'll send it your way for sure.
Okay. And people will also be able to find it. Do you have any music now that they can listen to?
Yeah, I have a lot of my composer stuff. I've scored a few feature films along my path, and that's up on SoundCloud. And then have some stuff from an older band called Beans and another band called The Awkward Stage up on Spotify if you want to hunt that down.
I will. And I'm sure tons of other people will as soon as they hear about it.
Beans?
Thank you for sharing
your talent.
Checking
that out straight away. Why didn't you tell me about Beans?
Beans.
Now you know.
Now I know.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
A wrap up of today's spotlight, but would you please go down the line, starting with Ty, on where people can find you and connect on social media?
Oh, yeah. Come check me out on Instagram, is what I'm on. Hi, everyone. Yeah, check me out on Instagram. It's Ty Runyan. That's the handle. TYGHRUNYAN.
Check me out on Instagram as well, Evan M. Williams, and Twitter, Evan_M_Williams. Thanks.
And then me, I'm on Twitter at Vlavla, don't ask. And then at Instagram, Alex Vlahos Official. Two very opposite ends of the spectrum for Twitter handles and Instagram handles. But you know where I am. Come find me.
Come find me.
Come find me.
Okay. Come.
Back to this. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. Alex is going to bed. I'm your moderator, as always, Carolina Vinetti. You can find me on Twitter and LenaBean113 on Instagram.
Sweet
Go to sleep.
Dreams. Sweet dreams.
Catch us next time on Spotlight with more fun episodes. And if you love this, make sure to give us a thumbs up. Thank you.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.